Change the music, huh?
Thank you.
Okay, it's working again.
Good morning.
Good morning. Morning, Julie. John? Hi.
I'm Margaret Daly, I'm the chair. We would like you to take your time to make a presentation that you want to make.
Oh, I see, okay.
After that, we'll ask you some questions, and it's possible that we are going to be meeting on another day, and we may ask you to come back and for that meeting. We don't know, but it depends on what you give us today and what you
Oh, okay. To. I wasn't sure of the format, because having presented the written thing, if I say what I'm going to say, I'm going to repeat what I put in there, but...
Excuse me, Bob, before you get started, can I get the names of the folks who are with you so that our records look like that for you?
Susan Armstrong, who's one of the directors. Chris Burns, who runs the Docent program on behalf of Seagram's.
B-U-R-N-S, like Robert Burns. First name is Chris.
It's Chris Burns.
Mm-hmm. And I'm Jim Rice.
Thank you.
I'm from the Mammal Institute.
Jim's on our board and is with the Marine Mammal Institute.
And I'm a volunteer for the Port of Newport.
Okay, thank you. Chris with a C?
C-H-R-I-S.
Well, over the last few years, well, let me go back even further than that. 18 to 20 years ago, the Port of Newport built a floating dock just inside of Pier Dock 1, so that it could be used by small boats visiting Newport. Immediately, it was commandeered by Sea Lions, but the Sea Lions were so popular with tourists who were able to walk onto Pier Dock 1 and look right down at these wild animals and get views of these wild animals that you don't get elsewhere. They were so popular with tourists that the port decided that they weren't going to try and recover it. Besides, trying to deal with 600-pound wild animals is a challenge. Now, over the years, these docks have suffered due to the weather that we have, and in the past they've been maintained by a combination of cooperation between Bayfront Merchants and the Port of Newport, and the general arrangement was that the merchants would provide the materials and the port would provide the labour, and that's how they were maintained over many years. But in the last few years they've suffered serious deterioration because of storms, and last year in particular we had some pretty violent storms, and the docks ended up that originally they were an 800-foot length directly below the edge of Pier Dock 1, and a 40-foot section making a T, giving 120 feet in total. And but at the beginning of this year, they were down to a 40-foot section that had lost most of its buoyancy, most of its floats, and could only hold three sea lions before it sank below the level, and the T-section and its pilings had disappeared altogether. And there was a meeting of stakeholders, people who had an interest in this dock, the port, merchants, Hatfield Marine Science Centre, and a number of others, and Chris, you were heavily involved. I wasn't involved at all at the time, but Chris was involved in those meetings. And at one time it looked as if the docks were just going to be allowed to disappear, and with it the tourist attraction. And it was decided that the docks were so important that something should be done. But the port pointed out that they had no funds, no resources, they were up to their ears with all of the great new projects we're involved in here. And so it was kind of left dangling that something had to be done, but you know, we weren't sure who was going to do it. And so a group of us And I'm not a merchant, but I drink my coffee at Stan's Base Gate. I mean, and I want to continue to enjoy that coffee. So a group of us looked at it and said, well, what we should do is form a non-profit, and we should do it. We should take the responsibility for funding off the port. And so we formed a non-profit as being the only viable way of raising large amounts of funding. For example, we couldn't be sitting here unless we were a 501c3. So we formed the foundation, applied for 501c3 and got it in, you know, pretty good time. And we started looking at means of keeping the docks going short term while looking long term. We found tremendous reaction from the public. We put a collection box on the pier. We put collection boxes in 20 or how many, Susan?
Probably 15 or 20.
15 or 20 businesses on the seafront, and we've rattled up about $8,000 so far from those sources. We started writing applications to funding sources. We actually came and made a presentation to the city and asked them if we could make an ad hoc application to this fund. And they liked what we said, but they told us that they couldn't make an exception for us, and we would hear from them when they were ready to do the second round. Meanwhile, a local scuba diver lent us his floating dock, which was soon covered by about 25 or 30...
Yeah, 25 or so yeah. per day.
Out of that initial meeting, it had been agreed that Sea Grant would provide docents on a voluntary basis, same kind of people that work at Hatfield Marine and the aquarium and so on, and they would cover not only the sea lions, but the working waterfront. And the interface between the sea lions and the working waterfront. And so from about June, was it?
Well, we had our training day in July, and then the sea lions come back about the 1st of August. So we manned it from August 1 to September 30.
Every day.
Every day with our volunteer working waterfront docents. We had ID jackets provided by Sea Grants and so forth. So we were able to interact with the public and... You know, we start obviously with the most visible and most audible thing, which is the sea lions, but quickly spun off from there into the working waterfront, especially if we had a fishing vessel at the end, on the wharf end of that pier that runs east and west. We'd talk to the fishermen and figure out what they were out for or going back out for or how much they just brought in, and so we kind of spun this off into the public understanding more about our working waterfront and the fishing fleet. I should point out one of the groups represented at that meeting about a year ago with the stakeholders was the commercial fishermen. They were there at the table, and their biggest problem was the fact that the public gets crowded down there on the dock. They need to run a forklift or a pickup to their boat with nets or repair gear or whatever. They can't get through the public. So my concept was the docent is a person of authority, even minor with just a blazer on, can go down and say, hey, folks, why don't you move up next to the rail here? These guys are coming through, and these are the people that put food on your table. So no problem. All summer there for 2 months. You just say that and they move right out of the way. The fishermen were happy because they didn't have any public standing in their way. They could bring their equipment in. But I think it was important, and it's important for you all to know that too, that the commercial fishing fleet has been involved in this from the beginning. Some of them, as like Commissioner Terry Thompson, really aren't favorable to sea lions.
But they're favorable to our tourist approach, and they gave us their $8,000 last week.
Right, so the county did provide the funding, even though Commissioner Thompson voted against it, Hall and Hunt voted for it, because they realized the overall value of attracting people to Newport that the sea lions provide.
Yeah. So we had this small scuba diver's dock, and that maintained the attraction, but in October, the first storm of the season actually destroyed the remaining 40 foot of our dock and took out the pilings and so on. And so we made an arrangement with the Port of Newport that they would sell us a short-term wooden dock, and we bought an 80-foot piece of dock which had been temporarily secured between the palings below the businesses and the other side of the pier. And so we think that'll last about a year. We were in discussions about replacing doing the piling work this winter you're only allowed to do piling work between 1st of November and 15th of February. And if you miss that window, you've got to wait a year before you can do it. So, unfortunately, we missed the opportunity. A, we didn't have enough money up front. And B, because, I mean, we were bringing money in, but the piling work is about $30,000. So, you know, we didn't have enough. And secondly, the permitting process, getting permits to do this, can be a lengthy process, and so we've missed that opportunity. So we're going to the plan now, and there's a work plan, a project plan, Chloe, in the back of your thing that shows we'll start the work in November, and we'll finish it by the end of January. Now, this issue about the the moving traffic has been an ongoing issue. We've acknowledged from the beginning there was an issue, that it was an issue, but we didn't know how to solve it. But as we got closer, and for 20 years, by the way, it's been an issue, but there's never been an accident. But if there was an accident tomorrow, people would say, well, that was entirely foreseeable. Why didn't you do something about it? And so we decided that we would do something about it. And the port asked us to put observation decks inside of the pier, so that people could come on and then move to one side and still be able to see the sea lions. But that has two effects. The first is you have to displace the docks, because we don't want people to be directly over the sea lions. Amongst other things, when they're three or four deep, the people, and they are, you know,
at least,
then you can't see directly below, and so you want the sea lion further out. So that means that even the existing pylons have got to be replaced, because we want to move the docks another 6 foot. So this only happened in December, and so two things. First of all, we haven't fully defined the engineering and how we're going to do this. We've had a number of meetings, and we think we're going to have freestanding docks that are standing, freestanding platform that's set on pilings, and probably attached to the dock for stability. And initially, we talked about two observation platforms at the last meeting of the diagram shows two. But at the last meeting of the port, I presented an update that suggested that we only have one. The one we're going to have is the long side. Yeah.
So we can get rid of it.
Yeah, and I have brought with me and we'll leave with you the revised drawing of that.
And why did they want you to go to one?
We wanted to go to one.
You wanted to go to one.
The traffic only moves, this traffic that we're talking about, only goes down the one section of dock to get to the ships that are at the end. So this is the only place they have the conflict of moving traffic.
Is this accurate as to the location of Pier Dock 1?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
It is?
Yeah. It's not to scale, but it's accurate that's Port Dock 1, the building.
So this camera person was in the restaurant photographing this photo?
I would think so. Well, close to it, yeah. Probably the outside.
No, it wasn't. You can stand, the side door of Port Dock 1 is right there. And in front of that, there's about a 6 foot length. Mm. There's about a 6 foot length which I guess I kind of show there, where you can stand and look down the side of the sea lions. But the fence of the restaurant,
yes,
actually is the fence of the dock. I mean, that's where we have all our notices on. So it is entirely representative of that.
You're taking this photo from your website, an excellent website, by the way. I particularly like the page that references people to all of Newport. But this area here is not extending out into the water.
No, not yet, because we haven't built the observation platform. You see the red, that...
So, that's the proposed observation platform on the drawing, but not in the picture.
Yeah, that edge there is this. This is the observation platform that will sit inside of that.
This is parallel to Bay Boulevard.
No, that's not. That's at right angles to Bay Boulevard. Oh, okay. This is Bay Boulevard, and this is the restaurant.
Okay.
So this photograph, for instance, is taken from right there.
Okay.
And this, you see, this that little bit of dock that's left,
yes,
is just that little section of dock.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so you're not going to have the observation, this other east-west observation area,
yeah,
and you're going to take that short piece and move it to a T position?
Correct, yes. Okay. As per that, and I can leave that with you.
Okay. So it moved down.
And the reason why we did that is that that means that there are less people that will be inclined to walk right out onto the far end of the dock, mm-hmm, which the fishermen do use, by the way. On occasions, they will unload their nets onto the dockside. But there's actually a water fountain on there that stops vehicular traffic going along it anyway.
There's also some signage over there. Mm-hmm.
There's lots of signage. There's signage all along.
Right,
both
but
sides.
I mean, there's signage out on that far dock as well.
Yeah, there is, yeah.
And we won't go out there, it just won't be.
People will go there. We just want to avoid the extra cost of putting in that extra observation power.
I understand
power.
That completely.
I mean, it's a 50-year-old wooden pier, you know. So, which is why we've decided that we'll have the observation deck effectively self-standing. Also, to be honest, when we got the quote, when we had the first meeting and discussed these costs, I considered that the estimated cost of putting in two observation platforms was greater than the contractor was telling us. Yeah. And so I was worried that if we went ahead with two, the project wouldn't cost $100,000, it cost $150,000. And so I've since had several meetings with that particular contractor, and I'm meeting him later this week. He's the guy that's putting the replacement docks into Depot Bay. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's going to, getting rid of that, enables us to keep the budget within the $105,000 that we've said.
So Robert, on here you have installed observation platforms $44,000. That's still going to stay the same. So what you're saying is in your proposal it stays the same even though you're doing them.
Yes, because to be honest, I thought at that stage that the $44,000 might have been an overstatement. He is the guy that installed the walkway down to Port Dock 5, mm-hmm, and so he knows what the cost is. But when we began discussing how would we have it freestanding, we came to the conclusion that we probably have to put in another four or six pilings, and four or six pilings will cost $30,000. Mm-hmm. And so I came to the conclusion that even though we haven't mapped out all the detail, and we didn't expect to be talking to you today, to be honest. We thought we probably had another month, and in that time we will work out the cost. So I think the $105,000 will be the cost of putting in the replacement sea line docks, including moving them inland, inboard, and producing the one 80-foot length platform.
Okay. So when do you anticipate you'd have more firm numbers with the changes?
I would say maybe a month from now.
Thank you.
And Julie asked about the 44,000, but also the 30,000 for the six pilings. That would stay the same. You'd still need six for the one. Is that what you're thinking? Two,
well,
two or something?
This new program uses one less piling.
Oh, okay.
And I've had exchange emails with Pete Billiter, who is the contractor that we're talking to, and meeting him. And I've asked him to confirm. He confirmed by email, but I said, well, we want to know for sure that the cost that we've allowed there will enable us to do this and do it properly. Mm-hmm. And he sent me back an email, which I've got here, saying yes. So, okay. I mean, I'm an engineer, so I have a feel for some of the aspects, but, you know, I haven't built an observation platform on a 50-year-old pier, and I doubt that anyone else has.
Given a good program for ongoing maintenance and barring any major weather events, what kind of lifespan do you give this structure?
Well, we think probably 15 years or more, you know. And remember that we're going to be collecting money on an ongoing basis for this, for ongoing maintenance. And if we need to, in 15 years, we can go through the entire process again. You know, we're still going to be a 501c3. There's still going to be programs for this kind of program, and we'll, if we have to. I mean, if a tsunami, if the big tsunami, we probably don't need to talk about the effects of Cascadia. Yeah. but if we have a bad storm,
the sea lions will be in Toledo.
This is true.
We have the big ones.
So will the bayfront. I might mention also, just that you see on the diagram the small section with the X across it, and that's the evacuation cage that we used to, the isolation cage that we used to isolate injured sea lions. And Jim manages the program, and we bring that isolation cage in and out of the docks as we need to. And
that's at Port Dock 5 currently. It was taken offline due to the dilapidation of the docks last year. The cage was initiated by Dr. Steve Brown, our local veterinarian who passed away last year. It was his idea. He raised money for it through a private foundation here in Oregon, and I think it would be a wonderful legacy to continue having that available. And we really need a secure location to install it, so it's available. It's primarily to deal with animals that show up entangled with debris. This is a common problem we face with sea lions that show up at Port Dock 1. It's a highly visible spot, and several times a year we get these animals with plastic packing bands wrapped around their necks that are cutting deep down into their muscle. And we end up with some very upset tourists, as well as local residents, who hate to see these animals in any apparent suffering. So this cage is really the one available option we have to confine an animal such that we can safely remove the gear from it without endangering its life. People often say, why don't you just tranquilize it and then get the gear off? If you shoot a dart at a sea lion, it's just going to jump in the water, and eventually once the drug takes effect, it'll drown. So it's really the only viable option we have would be to isolate the animal physically before trying to do anything invasive to remove any material. And we've been successful once in doing that, so we know it works.
How cooperative are the animals in terms of getting into the cage?
Not at all. So they need inducements, basically. We can sedate them and calm them down slightly so we can still work from outside the cage. We can insert hooks and knives and things on a pole, done very carefully from a skiff, basically, with trained people from the Marine Mammal Institute and the aquarium, as well as Daniel Luer, who's the local veterinarian who's working in Dr. Brown's practice. So everything is done very safely and carefully, but the animals are not ostensibly cooperative, really. They need to really be controlled physically. So
Do they understand that the cage is for their own good and they get inside?
They think it's the best condo in town.
I thought that's what you were asking. And when they first went down there, we're like, how are you going to get them in there? They climb up for each other and lay in there on top
they
of each other.
They love it. Three or four deep. Oh. Yeah. The problem is getting everything except the injured one out.
Well, it might remind them of a cave, like Sea Lion Cave. Oh, yeah. So, you know.
And they love each other. They love body contact. They like to pile on and, you know, it helps with thermoregulation, I guess. They're just sociable animals. Mm-hmm. Even though they like to bicker and bark and bite each other, they also want to be on top of each other constantly. So
eventually the injured one will get in there.
Yes.
And stay in there.
For a while.
No, well, it has a
guillotine door. So we can find them, and then we can sort out the other ones. We can sedate the one that we want, and then open the door and let the other ones out, and then we can work on that one animal.
Okay.
So. Now, when I was working on this thing, the biggest problem I had was relating. I mean, the feedback we get is that people love the sea lion docks. People, for many, it's the quintessential attraction of Newport. Stan was telling me he has people that have come in to his coffee shop and say that they first came with their parents 15 years ago, and now they're bringing their kids, you know, and they're bringing them to see the sea lions. You know, it's part of the thing. And the feedback we got from the docents is that it's a big attraction.
Yeah, we sure do.
And I quote in there Chris's feedback that he gave me. But the problem is, how do we prove that the sea lions are causing people to come back, that they're causing people to come here? I mean, it's not like the aquarium, who record your, you know, as you come in, they record your zip code, and as you go out, they ask, give you an exit questionnaire, and so.
Let's say, as a merchant, you have no idea how many times a day we hear people lamenting when they hit that one period of time when the sea lions are all gone. All day long. Like, we came just to see them. And they're very disappointed, and it happens every season.
Yeah.
So. Well, we're going to use that window, which is June 1 to August 1, basically, when the sea lions are gone, to have docents on the dock at that point, which will start by saying, here's why they're not here. You know, they migrate this time of year and they're gone. But that lets us more quickly spin off into the working waterfront, South Beach marine facilities, you're going ahead, whatever we want to send people around the community to the other attractions. And that's been, since day one with the docents, an important part of what I know you're looking at, the two things. One is, are they coming from outside of town? And two, are we using that just for ourselves on the bayfront, for the merchants there, for example, or is it a Newport thing? And the example that I gave in my little report is it's a Newport thing, because it starts with sea lions, goes to working waterfront, then we start expanding the attractions that we have in our area, which we would all call Newport, from Yaquinahead, Nagat Beach, all the way through South Beach and the State Park. And what we found people saying, and it's in my little report, that they said, we had first-timers, no idea Newport had this much to offer. I actually heard people walking on the dock on the way back to the car going, let's see if they'll let us stay another night at the hotel. So I think it's led to increased traffic to begin with, and also longer stays. When people realize how much we have over Lincoln City, Cannon Beach, or whatever, even Florence, which does have a working waterfront and a few things, we have so much more going on in our area, certainly since the Marine Science Campus has blossomed in the last few years and so forth. We have a lot of places to send people, and that's part of the charge of the docents, is to be aware of the attractions in Newport. So we think that it not only draws people here, it also causes them to stay longer, and number three, it brings them back. Because other folks would say, well, we got to go, the kids have got to go back to school, but we're coming back here because we didn't get to see, and they'll name three or four things that we mentioned. So I think from the perspective that you are looking at here, that this one attraction fulfills the basic paradigm that you're working under, which is to get people here from out of town, to keep them here longer, and to have them come back. And this attraction appears to do that. Even when the sea lions aren't here, that's a really good one. In July, we can say, well, they'll be here in August. Come on back. So return traffic is something that we're thinking about. We're not salespeople for Newport, but it works out that way. The docents on the dock, we turn out to be marketers for Newport, basically, because we're talking about the other facilities and attractions.
And if we don't replace them, that disappears.
I mean, we lose, you know, that whole
what
thing.
We're doing is putting back what's been there for nearly 20 years.
Well, what you were saying about the migration patterns, that they're gone from June 1st to August 1st, how do you track, is it a transient population? How do you know they're coming back? Are they long-term residents? Or?
Well, they're almost all, complete, well, actually, listen, Jim, he's the mammal expert. I just do the interpretation. Jim's the expert, and he can give you a better handle on that.
That is breeding season, basically, yeah. June 1st to August 1st. And breeding occurs in the Channel Islands of Southern California. So what we have here are generally adult males, a few sub-adult males, too. But we don't have adult females here at all. So for these animals to breed, they have to travel down to Southern California, and they do it on a predictable basis. The drive to reproduce is very strong.
They don't have any women. How many docents do you have?
I think we had 21 at training and probably 18 or so who rotated through the week in different schedules, 2 to 4 hours a day. But now I volunteer other places, and we have more docents now. This year we'll have, I have at least 6 new ones that will be added to our cadre. So we'll probably have 20 or 25 docents this season. In fact, we're meeting soon. Sea Grant actually has the money for the jackets and some of the program that we initiated. We probably will see 25 to 30 at training, and then maybe 20, 25 active docents.
You had a question.
Research.
Explain to me, because I've never clearly understood this. I mean, they're going to be out there anyway. So what is the relationship? How does it hurt the fishermen? Why do they not like them there in one place? Explain that to me.
I'm not sure that it's the fact that they don't like them there, because at our stakeholders meeting a year ago, one of the points that was raised, and I think was proper, is if they're here, they're not on their docks.
Well, that's
and we got that sort of positive response from the fishermen. They'll probably haul out somewhere, and if they have the breakwater, where sometimes there's 200 or 300 of them, and they have the 25 or 30 up close here, those two areas are where all the sea lions are hauled out, basically, and they're not on the fishermen's docks. Removing this takes, we call them the lazy ones who don't want to claim the breakwater. This takes those guys, gives them a place other than Port Dock 3, 5, 7, to crawl out onto, and I think some of the fishermen would tell you, and I know they've told me, that when the docks are there, they have less trouble with them trying to get on their docks. So,
in fact, the day after the dock disappeared on October the 13th, on October the 14th, captain's fishing charters had 14 sea lions on his dock, which didn't please him too much.
And speaking to fishermen too, the ones who do fight it and say, you know, they basically just don't have the sea lions here, but they're going to be here anyway, and they're going to haul out like that on the other docks that are on the breakwater. But we get no benefit from it at all. Once you explain to them, they're here anyway, but it doesn't benefit Newport in any way, shape, or form. You put them here, at least we have a benefit, and at least it draws more people here who buy your seafood, who eat the food in the restaurants, who buy your seafood. So that helps them kind of give a better perspective.
I think there's a growing awareness, and John, you made a presentation to the port last week, and at the same presentation just before yours, those people that were devising the strategic plan gave a presentation, and they showed the latest vision statement. And the vision statement there is that the port should be placing a high priority on projects that are improving the local economy. Mm-hmm. And there and then, while the guy was making the presentation, he ad-libbed that therefore the work of Port Dock 1 is probably becoming a priority 1. Mm-hmm. He said that, didn't he? And what he was saying is that the port has now bought into a vision statement that says where exactly the kind of project they should be helping. And that's why, even though the fishing, commercial fishing representative on the commission, David Jinks, is in favour of this, mm-hmm. but we all want to avoid a position where we all want to avoid the, a situation where someone gets hurt because we didn't take the thing. I mean, there's only a ship on the end of there, but maybe 5% of the time anyway. And when the docks, when the full docks are completed, it'll be even less. It'll, who knows, it might end up being the sea lion dock.
Whose insurance covers the activities around this pier dock one?
At the port.
Port's insurance.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So you need their cooperation.
And we've got their cooperation. Yeah. In fact, we haven't got it yet, but Don Mann has promised us that we will get a letter, official letter of support from the port. So by the time we meet you next, I'm sure we'll have that in place. We just, you know, they only meet once a month, and so we haven't quite got that yet.
Should be right.
So I have some questions on the finances, if I could.
Yeah. Yes. Indeed,
you listed some the total amount and some requests. I guess you've got all that kind of tallies right to the right number. So the concern is, what happens if someone does not come through? Does that kill the whole thing? Also, we've got two other organizations approaching us. What if we don't fund you at the full level? Does that also kill the project?
Well, the answer is no. This is the non-profit foundation data book, which lists 1,499 funding sources for 501c3.
They say it at the start,
of which they list 298 in great detail with all the details. And I think I've said in there, if anything fails, we just find someone else, or we repeat. I can tell you, for example, that the Celets Foundation, to whom we applied and who haven't yet announced their results, mm-hmm. have turned us down for the 6,000 we applied for from them. But we will simply reapply. They gave the reason for us that we weren't able to demonstrate local support. And their local support, mm-hmm. means people giving you money. And of course, Terry Thompson's stand at the commission last month, where they didn't give us the money. We'd said to the commission, "Look, we'd like to know that we're going to get it because we want to tell the Selects that we've got local money." and of course, it was deferred, but it was only deferred, and we've now got it. So the Selects meet every 3 months and have 3 month cycles. We've got enough time that we'll put that back in, and we haven't talked to the Grand Ronde, and we haven't talked to, you know, the other 1,492. So that's our answer, and we have enough time because the work is not now being done till November.
Well, who owns all that? Is that the port? And do you have to get new permits and leases, or?
We don't have to get new leases. We have to get new permits to put to do the in-water work from the Corps of Engineers. But the port, that piece of property, is part of Port Dock One, and we have the full cooperation of the port.
And then, who would oversee the construction of all this? Would it be the port or your group? Or?
No, our group, I think. Our group. In fact, there's a debate. What should we do with the? Who should own the dock when we replace it? We're happy to give it to the port. I mean, the port. We're the original owners of the docks, and we're happy to give it to them. Fortunately, because the port is a government body, we as a non-profit can give assets to a government body. We can't give it to a profit-making organization.
And then your group would just partner with them and keep raising money for the maintenance?
Yeah, as we have in the past. As the merchant have in the past, without having access to the kind of funding sources that we have as a non-profit. So yeah, we'll just keep on doing it, and every so often, every 15 years or something, we'll replace them. if we need to.
Any other questions?
I just wanted to follow up on the migratory patterns. You said they were gone June 1st, August 1st to go to Southern California. How do you know that they will come back to Yucuna Bay?
Well, history tells us they will. It's a regular, ongoing process. The males generally leave Southern California and head up into the Pacific Northwest every fall and winter. This is where they forage, basically. This is where
they
food is.
Is there like a certain group you say they come back?
The adult males of the population generally come up to the Northwest.
So it's the same group of
generally, and actually ODFW has done long-term studies of the animals. They put brands on certain individuals. Sometimes if you go to the docks at Port Dock 1, you'll see an animal with a brand right on its back, a freeze brand or a hot brand, with a C and then three digits generally. Those are animals that were captured in the Columbia River in hot brand and by ODFW, and they can follow them for years on end and know where they go and what their habits are. And it's pretty well established that they come back year after year to the same estuaries, and they move back and forth. Just because we have sea lions in Newport this week doesn't mean those same sea lions are going to be here next week. We might have a completely different cohort that takes its place.
But you always know some will always be.
There will always be some core group that comes during the fall and winter months
and
in the spring.
And only about 10% of them use these docks that work on the sea lion docks. There are over 300 in the harbour, at least in the bay, and most of them climb onto the breakwater that surrounds the harbour and protects the harbour. And about 25 or 35 use these docks, and that's enough for the viewing public. That's all it needs to attract them. If we take these docks away, they'll just go and join the other 300 that are on the breakwater. Mm. We'll have no adverse effect on the sea lions, only on the tourists and on Susan's business.
Maybe to just follow up quickly, if your follow-up might be, build it and they will come? And the answer is yes, because there were concerns about this in our initial meeting about we build all these nice new docks, what if the sea lions won't use them? Now, let me just tell you this quickly. When the last of the original dock was too deteriorated to use and we pulled it out, Bob mentioned we borrowed a diving platform, basically, from the diver at Undersea Gardens. I was there when they brought it in. He hooked it up. 45 minutes, we had three sea lions on that platform already. And in an hour and a half, it was full. So they're fully aware this is for them and it's in their areas, but that's been a concern to some folks. If they invest all, and you invest our city money in this project, what if the sea lions don't climb out of the docks? Believe me, they know if it's not connected to shore, it's for them, and they don't have a problem with that. I'm not kidding. 45 minutes, first three were already on there, and I guess they went out to the breakwater and told the others. An hour and a half, we had 25 sea lions on the platform.
Yesterday, there were 35 on the dock. It was almost underwater. And there were another 15 to 20 doing this circling thing that they do in that area with their flipper out. Yeah. So there were 45.
My turn.
Now that I think about it, that might be the reason.
We don't get it
right, Caroline.
Well, okay.
Way with the sea lions.
Anyway, sorry.
Is there feeding of the sea lions there at those docks?
Sorry? No.
Not forbidden.
No.
By federal law.
And that's one of the things the docents are there to help control if it gets there. I've only had in the entire 2 months two people who showed up with one guy had a package of something from Fred Meyer's, another guy a little bag that looked like cut up sardines or herring, and they start, but our charge is immediately, so that's against the law. Marine Mammal Protection Act, we can't feed them. But a lot of questions about what time do we feed them. But that gives us the hook to say these are wild animals. You have this unique experience in Newport that you're 10 feet from wild animals. So you don't feed them, we don't feed them, we just watch them. And they probably wouldn't eat it anyway. They're after live game.
I always wondered, are they used as educational opportunities as well for the
There's like signage there too.
Aquarium and all of the marine stuff, do they study them at all?
Well, the aquarium has some, actually. They have two now, I believe, isn't it? I think they have
an
two.
Exhibit?
They're not an exhibit now because they're rebuilding the exhibit, but There is some signage there, which is basic education on the sea lions, why it's mostly males and where they travel and the times of year they're here and so forth. We do have signage about that. We have signage also on what Jim works on in disentanglement and goes on to remind people about plastics and how that gets into the ocean and what it does to marine life and so forth. We have a new sign that's coming up that will be more based on the working waterfront there and what we do with that, and some basic rules like no crabbing between the tie-up lines when there's a boat in off the edge of the wharf, and Sea Grant is working on that. So we will have at least one new sign. So we use the educational opportunities. But the docents also are instructed to where if they want to know more, then they need to go over to the aquarium or the Hatfield Marine Science Center, where they can find people who could delve a lot deeper into it. The real scientists may be working with sea lions.
In the near future, there may be a maritime museum in that area.
Yes, right up behind us there. It won't be too far away. So it just fits into what we're doing here so darned well. But it's such a boisterous attraction. I mean, it drags people in driving down Bay Boulevard that don't even know they're there. They hear that barking. They try to find a place to park. You guys can deal with that some other way.
Can't you build a platform?
We're thinking about adding parking garage to our port here. It attracts people even off the street. It's a maybe poor use of the language, but it's like a circus barker. It's bringing people in, and then if we do have people there to spin them off into the rest of what we've discussed here today, it just seems to me that it's such a good use of funds for what we're all trying to do here in our community.
So I see originally you had a contractor that didn't apply for the correct permits. Can you talk about what happened, and then if you have a new one already picked out?
As a matter of fact, I'm still... Steve Webster, who has Riverbend Marine, is the only local piling contractor, and so we invited him. He put in the previous pilings there, and we asked him to be our piling contractor for this, and in fact. He didn't fully drop out. We had a meeting with him about 6 weeks ago because we were concerned that, you know, the permit process didn't appear to be in place. And at one stage, Steve had actually brought the Corps of Engineers down and met with Stan and discussed the project. And, you know, and then all of a sudden, it turned out that the permits weren't in place. And I think there were two issues with Steve. One is that I don't think permitting, which is a mundane administrative process, is his cup of tea. And I think there was an element in that. Also, there were some changes. I mean, Janet Webster, who is his wife, is now the acting interim director of Hatfield Marine Science Center. But it wasn't at the time we had this discussion. That hadn't been announced, so there was there might have been an issue. I've personally emailed Steve since to ask him if he will come back into the project, because I've said we want to use local people, and he's got a long-standing interest and knowledge in that. The contractor we're talking to at the moment is a guy called Billiter, Pete Billiter, who is doing the Depot Bay docks, who is doing the piling work that was discussed at the at the port that has to be done right now, the maintenance piling work and so on. So he's the nearest thing to a local contractor, but we would prefer to have Steve, and I've written to him, and not just because you ask in your application are you using local people. As a policy, we just try and keep it in the community. And so I'm hoping that he'll change his mind. But if he doesn't, it's for personal reasons. He wouldn't spell it out, but he said he had other things he wanted to be doing with his time. So he might be, we all get to the point, don't we, that we say, I'm sorry, I'm going to do the things I want to do and not the things that other people want us to do, And so there was no animosity or anything. And I, as I say, I'm hoping that he'll come back. He'll come back in. But you know, he just he just said he had other priorities.
Okay. Any other questions? Yeah, we're running out of time.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming in.
Can I just add one last thing? The impact, when I was looking at the impact on this, and I've tried to explain it in the thing, the financial and beneficial impact, it's, I mean, the amount of money, capital money, is nothing. I mean, $100,000, not going to, you know, and we, most of, whatever we can, we'll spend locally. But the real impact on this is that year after year after year after year, these sea lion docks and the sea lions on them are going to be attracting more and more people. And as I say in there, I think if 0.1% of the visitors that come come because of the sea lions, then that's over 100,000 a year beneficial impact for every year, year in, year out. So I think that's, I mean, it, we're, it's not quite like the aquarium, you know, if I use something that was funded last year, you know, they, there's a specific impact for them. And on the community, but for here, the impact is way, way beyond the amount of money that we're investing in capital.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Bob, if this committee decides it wants to have your group come back and respond to other questions, I'll be in touch with you.
Okay, thank you. By the way, Stan Pickings, our president, is in Morocco at the moment, so couldn't be here. And nice. And Neil Henning, yeah, Neil Henning is up at a business meeting in Seattle, so he can be here.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much.
Short break for people to.